Good evening and welcome to the February 4th meeting of the Story County Planning and Development Commission meeting. Glad to see a lot of people here tonight. Roll call, please.
Peggy.
Here.
Towser. Gast.
Here.
Weigel.
Okay, thank you. Approval of the agenda. We have an agenda in front of us. Are there any additions or subtractions or...
Move approval.
Thank you. Is there a second? Second by Weigel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We'll proceed with the agenda as it is. Minutes. Chris. Goes?
Move approval.
Second by Towser. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion carries. Minutes are approved as they stand. This is a time for public comments. If anybody cares to say anything that's pertinent to planning and development that is not associated with an agenda item tonight, now is the time to do it. And if you wish, go up to the podium, give your name and address, and address the group. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on then to the next item. Old business. I see we have no old business, so let's proceed. Right on into the new business, and that'll get us into the meat of it here. So with that, I ask Charlie if you'll run us through here REZ01-13, the superior rezoning. Before Charlie gets started, we'll have a staff presentation, and then we'll have the commissioners able to ask questions, and then we'll have a time for the applicant to come forward and present his case, and then after that we'll have some public comment. Whenever you do, we'd like to have you come up to the microphone and give your name and address, and I'll kind of be watching here so we don't get any back and forth comments, just going back and forth. We don't like to have everything recorded from the microphone. So, Charlie?
As you have mentioned, this is the superior rezoning request. The property owner is Bansgard Seeds Farm Incorporated. The applicant is Stephen Supier. Looking at the general property location, it is an area of land in the north three quarters of the northeast quarter of Section 31 in Franklin Township. It's a little bit west of North Dakota Avenue. I'll show you a map of it here in a second. Size of the parcel is just a little under 29 gross acres. Current land use, it is assessed as agriculture. I'm looking at the land use framework map designation, as it is within 2 miles of the city of Ames. It is governed by the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is a component of the Story County Development Plan that does designate this property as urban residential, which is a subcategory of the urban service areas, and it also does designate the property as natural areas. As I mentioned, map here above, you can kind of see the property, well, not really, but it's in the green hashes here. You've got North Dakota Avenue running through right here, City of Ames just being located down in this area, on Onion Creek Lane, just to the east of the property. A few site shots that we took back in November. Obviously, there's no snow on the ground, so they weren't recent. But this shot right here, this is about the northwest, or excuse me, the northeast corner of the property, kind of looking to the south a little bit. This from about the same location, looking a little bit more due west. Same here, same location, just again a little bit more due west on the property. This one is about the center of the north line of the property, looking straight due south. And then this one from the northwest corner of the property, looking a little south. And this one looking back to it a little bit more east. And those conclude the pictures right there. So this one right here probably kind of gives you a good idea of the of what we consider the more developed area of this ground. Few of the facts associated with the case. Currently, the subject property is located inside the A1 zoning district. The applicant does propose to rezone the property to R1 residential, and this is in an effort to construct a single-family dwelling on the approximate 29-acre piece of land. Looking on some of the history, zoning history on the property, when zoning was first implemented in the county back in 1958, the east half of this property was zoned R1 while the west half was zoned A1. about March of 1989, the Board of Supervisors did change the zoning on this subject parcel to all A1 agriculture, and that's where it is today. Last year in August, we did get a property research request for this property from the applicant, and that property research was performed on the subject property. We did find that none of the exceptions to the minimum lot size requirement of the A1 zoning district applied to this parcel, and as such, we would not be able to issue a zoning permit for a single-family dwelling. With that information, on October 3rd of last year, the applicant did apply for a variance. The variance was to the minimum lot size requirement of the A1 zoning district in an effort to try to be able to build a single-family dwelling on a parcel less than 35 acres. Subsequently, on December 5th of 2012, the Story County Board of Adjustment did review the proposed variance and on a 4-0 vote denied the variance request. Getting into the rezoning, looking at the standards of approval regarding the rezoning, and this is according to Section 15.2 of the Land Development Regulations, the five standards of approval include: the proposed rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan. Again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is an adopted component of the Story County Development Plan, so in this case, we're only looking at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Second standard of approval, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district and the district requirements. Number three, the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. Number four, the proposed rezoning shall protect environmental resources. Typically at this one, we look at parcels that contain more than 50% of natural resource areas as designated on the development plan, in this case, again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And lastly, in areas where the petition to rezone requests a change from the A1 district to any other district, land scoring 267 or above for the total LISA, as determined by the land evaluation and site assessment, shall not be approved. And I was notified today that actually in our staff report, I think the last sentence there was left out. But again, the main thing that we're looking at there is that the land scoring 267 or above, they shall not be approved for rezoning. So with that, we're first going to go over the last three, and as I had mentioned in the staff report, I don't think there's too much of a question on if these three standards of approval are met through this request, so I'm just going to kind of briefly outline those. First, looking at the surrounding land uses and the development patterns, the proposed amendment area is located in an area that is one of unincorporated Story County's more dense residential areas, as it is located just outside the city limits of Ames. The amendment area is adjacent to an R1 residential zoning on its east side, which includes some large lot, approximately 6.5-acre residential uses. There is a 4.5-acre farmstead site adjacent to the amendment area on its northeast corner, and an 8.5-acre farmstead site adjacent to the amendment area on its south side. On a majority of the adjacent north side and the entire adjacent west side of this area, it is undeveloped agricultural land. Looking at land within 3/4 mile to the proposed area, just a little over 60% of the land is used for agriculture, about 15% for commercial, about 12% is tax exempt, usually owned by some governmental agency, a church or a railroad, and approximately 12% is used for residential uses. You know, we always say typically when numbers for the agricultural land use especially are around that 6% mark, that actually is pretty low for a majority of the area that we have in the county. And that kind of shows here in the next one. We looked at all the total parcels with this 3/4 mile of this. A little over 75% of those parcels are used for residential, 13 for agriculture, about 8 for commercial, and about 2% of them were tax exempt parcels. So that really kind of shows you the trends in land use in the area. Looking at the environmental resources, number 4, the proposed amendment area does include some lands located in the natural areas. Total of about 10.1 acres are roughly 35% of the total amendment area. So again, that's under that 50% threshold. The natural area designation does include land located in the special flood hazard areas defined by FEMA. And then lastly, looking at the land evaluation site assessment, the proposed amendment area scored a 150 for the site assessment and a 220 for the total LISA. So again, those two numbers being well under the threshold that's required by that number 5 requirement. So as we had mentioned, when examining the standards of approval as laid out in section 15.2, staff does conclude that numbers 3, 4, and 5 would be satisfied. And realistically, what it comes down to that if the commission were to agree that 3, 4, and 5 were satisfied, the commission would need to decide whether numbers 1 and 2 were satisfied, and we'll get into those a little bit more extensively. First, looking at number one, conformance to the Story County Development Plan. Again, the Ends Urban Fringe Plan is what we're looking at here. The urban service areas is intended to be urban in character and become part of a municipal jurisdiction as it develops. Urban services and development standards are required for development within this area. Typically, lands within this area are annexed as they are developed. The following nine policies do apply to the urban service area. Now, these were included in the staff report. Do you want me to go over them individually, or do you just want to make sure and kind of save some time on this? But there are the nine policies here, and again, they were included in the staff report. So, and then the urban residential land use designation does apply to areas reserved for future city growth, in this case, the city of Ames. Residential land uses within the urban residential designation area are annexed and then developed at an urban density and with infrastructure and subdivision according to urban standards. And again, there's five policies associated with this one as well. Those were included in the staff report. So kind of doing our analysis on number one on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, we did note on the 35% of the parcel that is designated as natural areas, we would conclude that this area appears to be preserved by the applicant's site plan, and the applicant's proposal also appears to adequately buffer the natural area. If the commission were to agree with that, it would need to decide if the proposal conforms to the urban residential land use category of the urban services area. And as we did note, the urban service area land use class is meant to be an area that will be annexed into the city in the foreseeable future. There is a high emphasis placed on making sure any development of this area is done to city standards in an orderly manner. Any urban service area shall be protected from any inappropriate development that would constrain the efficient growth of the city. A lot of the policies and goals of the urban service area and the urban residential land use designation commonly use the term development. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan doesn't have any definitions, but the Story County Land Development Regulations do define development as any man-made change to improved or unimproved real estate, including but not limited to buildings or other structures, mining, dredging, filling, grading, paving, excavation, or drilling operations. The applicant site plan does propose placing one single-family dwelling on approximately 16.5 acres of developable land that's taken out that natural areas from the entire site. And we did note while this particular proposal is in no way in conformance to the urban residential land use designation, the applicant does argue that his proposed plan will allow for development in the future to the urban residential density under the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We've said this in the past, while staff does agree that the applicant's statement could be correct and that all of the policies and goals of the urban services area and the urban residential land use designation would probably continue to be attainable with this proposal, a vacant parcel would be less constraining to the efficient growth of the city, and I think that speaks for itself. Moving on then to standard of approval number two, conformance to the statement of intent of the R1 district. The statement of intent of the R1 district states that it is designed to provide for a district for single-family detached dwellings at a low density. Subdivisions created within the R1 district may also include community facilities and open space uses with special provisions to protect the residential character of the district. The district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with surrounding land uses and not in conformance with the Story County Development Plan. While one single-family dwelling on 16.5 acres is not considered low density, it is possible to meet this statement with a subdivision of the land. Furthermore, the R1 district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with surrounding land uses and not in conformance with the Story County Development Plan. While it appears at this time the main focus of this rezoning by the applicant is to permit an isolated rural dwelling, such a dwelling may not be incompatible with the surrounding land uses. We did a quick inventory of the area. There are currently 10 parcels that surround the proposed amendment area, five of which have a single-family dwelling located on them. Those that have a single-family dwelling located on them average a little over 9 acres in size. However, there is an abundance of vacant agricultural land on the amendment areas west, northwest, and most of its north side. Main thing that we wanted to point out here was if those lands were to be developed to the policies and goals of the urban services area and the urban residential land use designation as envisioned in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, an isolated rural dwelling inside the proposed amendment area would be incompatible with the surrounding land uses at that time. So going back, the main two questions that staff feels the main two questions that the commission does have to consider with this proposal would be, first, does the proposed amendment conform to the urban services area land use designation and the urban residential land use classification of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is, again, an adopted component of the Story County Development Plan? And lastly, does the proposed amendment conform to the statement of intent of the R1 zoning district? With that, your four alternatives are listed on the screen here above and were included in the staff report, and I'm assuming there will be questions with this one, so I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Okay, thank you. What questions do we have from the commissioners here? I have one right off the bat. We'll cover it a little bit. Low density. Tell me about low density.
Low density, and you've got low density and high density, and you kind of almost have to think backwards when you're thinking of this. Low density means more dense use, which means, you know, more, for example, more dwellings within 1 acre of land would be low density. You know, one dwelling on 1 acre of land might be higher density, where four dwelling units on 1 acre of land would be lower density, if that makes sense. I'm getting confused looks on here. It's just like I said, if you think of it backwards, low dense, you know, means more dense uses, more uses within a certain amount of land. High dense would mean less dense, less uses within inside that area of land.
So when this is talking about low density up here, and one of the ones that we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
it would be referring to wanting.
Yeah, the R1 district, for example, requires minimum lot sizes of 25,000 square feet, which is a little over half an acre in size, which within our ordinance is pretty low density. You know, we have minimum lot sizes of 25,000 square feet and 1 acre, and most of our residential uses, that 25,000 square feet would be low density, or that 1 acre would be more high density. Did I come across okay?
I think I know what you're saying. It just seems backwards from...
Yeah, and that's typically how you just kind of have to remember with density, is it almost does seem backwards.
Questions?
In this particular request, it is saying that we want smaller lot sizes, more or less, than the larger lot sizes within the R1 district.
So the Board of Adjustment denied a variance just because it didn't meet any of the criteria for
mm-hmm.
variance. So this is their only choice, to rezone it.
Yeah, it'd be, well, yeah, for this particular, within our ordinance, I guess I can't think of any other way that they could achieve it other than maybe asking for a text amendment to the A1 zoning district allowing for smaller lot sizes. But, you know, I think this would be the most logical next step in trying to achieve what they're looking at.
Probably already said this, but I think I forgot already. Is any of it in cropland, or is it all in...
No, most of it, I believe, is considered pasture ground, although I'm not sure it's even being used for that. I think it's just kind of unused ground right now at this point, but none of it's used as a row crop.
You say those other properties are mainly about 9 acres. Is there one or two that's quite a bit bigger, or they're mostly 9 or under?
I know I said there was 5 of them altogether, didn't I? And I think the 5 would be this one right here, and that's probably a little bit larger than 9 acres. These two right here, which are probably right about that. And then this one right here, which I think is 4.5 acres. So, and I think this one right here I included as well, and this one's kind of the larger one on there too. So I think this one's 4.5 acres. This one here I'm going to guess is probably about 7 acres. These ones here, probably about 5 acres. And then this one here is probably closer to 15 acres.
They kind of are looking at building on around 16 acres. And then the other part was more the natural area.
Yeah.
And that was going to be left.
Mm-hmm. The natural area, yeah, I would assume that they're not, I mean, based off their site plan, they're not looking at taking any of this natural area up, but you can kind of see where the wooded area is here. That's mainly the natural areas on the property, so we just discounted
all
that.
One chunk. It's just
mm-hmm.
that you're not
yep.
really planning on your plan
yeah.
leaving it alone.
Yeah, if we were ever looking at a subdivision and bringing the Andrew and Friend standards into it, typically that area would be netted out. So when we'd be looking at it, it would be approximately 16 and a half acres of developable ground that we'd be looking at.
So you're saying the rest of that natural area really isn't in the future?
I wouldn't assume so,
area.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of floodplain in there, and it's pretty densely forested, so I wouldn't think that they would be developing that, but...
For my questions.
Even David, any questions?
Do you have a map that shows the zoning within the area?
Didn't include one on here, but pretty much, I probably should have included that, and I apologize. If you look at it, this area kind of, where this line is here, is all R1 zoning, and then it cuts back over here, and you can follow this line up right here. And this is all R1 zoning between that line right here and North Dakota Avenue. The rest of it on the other side is all A1.
Anything else? Okay, we may come back to you. Thanks. Is the applicant here? Would you like to step forward to the podium and give your name and address? Speak into the microphone and present your case, please.
My name is Steve Zapier. Sorry, there we go. Is that better? My name is Steve Zapier. I am actually from Ames, and my wife wanted to be here with me tonight, but she's home with her 3 sick kids, so it's just me tonight. I want to thank all of you for being here and obviously considering our variance request or our rezoning application. There are a couple of things that I just want to talk about real briefly in regard to the staff report that the staff has kind of put together. Obviously, as Charlie indicated, items 3, 4, and 5 of the application or of the standards are pretty much have been determined to be met. There's two other ones that there were some questions about. Standard number one, I just wanted to point out that obviously, as we mentioned, the natural area is going to be preserved based on what we're planning to do. And right now we're planning on just doing a single family residence on the property and staying out of the natural areas that are to the, I guess it'd be to the west, east side of the property. And just to go back and look at a definition of what the development is, I think the Story County Development Standards, their definitions do say that any kind of building structure or anything of that nature would be considered development. I did want to point out, obviously, there's different levels of development as well. You know, if you look at a development from nothing to a large urban residential development that you often see in the city of Ames, one on this side of the building and then the other side of the building, you know, where would this fall? And this obviously would be way on this side of the building, very little intrusiveness to the surrounding area. Versus a high-density urban residential development. So just wanted to point that out as well. And then also that a single-family residence on this property would be, and the property is somewhat inaccessible in that there's only an easement that's accessed from North Dakota Avenue currently. Otherwise, the property actually would be landlocked, but there is an access easement, and there's utility easements and so on, so you can actually get to the property and use the property. But because of that, there's virtually no impact compared to a vacant property. So considering what we're, you know, a single-family residence versus, you know, the property that's there really isn't much difference there. Or if you think of any other terms, as comparing that to a high-density urban residential development, that still can happen based on what we're planning supposing to do. The other one was approval, standard approval number two. The single-family residence, you know, is generally what staff has said is not compatible with surrounding land uses. We have spoken with many residents in the area countless times, and everybody that we've talked to so far has been very supportive of what we've been trying to do, and we really appreciate that. I think everybody in the area really understands that they like their larger rural development that they have in the area. They'd like to see that continue, and so they've been very, very supportive of what we're trying to do at this time. The one thing I did want to point out is in that last sentence of standard number two, where the staff didn't indicate that a single family resident on the 16 plus acres wouldn't be compatible with the development if everything in the agricultural area as part of the East Fringe plan were to develop. Since it's bordered by several residences, I think Charlie had indicated 5 of 10 were actually R1 or bordered by a resident. Even if all that area was developed, we still feel like it would still be compatible with the surrounding uses since it is bordered by other properties of similar zoning and similar use. So we just wanted to point that out as well. Charlie did mention, obviously, the property is not currently really used very much. It's not really used for oil crop. It's not used for, much of anything. It's just kind of sitting there. And that's one of the reasons why the property owner is willing to sell it to us to build a single-family residence. If he was making a lot of money farming it, he wouldn't be selling it. But since it's a very little use, agricultural use, he can't sit on this property forever. He feels like he needs to do something with it. Therefore, he's willing to sell it to allow us to build a single-family residence on the property. And I just, in doing my research and looking at things in the past of, regulation and how that impacts for urban or agricultural development, one of the things I ran across and what found very interesting is, in that kind of situation, there are things to consider. And over the years, if there's a lot of regulation for a piece of property like that, it can be considered somewhat of a taking. And there's several criteria that would indicate what that would be. One of those would be where regulation has denied the landowner all economically viable use of the land. That would, in some cases, be considered a taking. Or where the government is acting to regulate land use, employing a more intrusive or burdensome means rather than a less intrusive and burdensome means. In other words, it just means that could this have been planned out, as part of their aims of the fringe plan to allow for more easily usable property for the current property owners. So that's just another thing that we wanted to point out to the commission. Again, the building a single family residence in this property, we feel preserves the natural area that's there. It preserves the beauty in the areas, preserves the surrounding, and really builds on what's in place currently in the surrounding area. And again, want to stress that even though, this single family residence, if it was built now and approved, could still be built to Bain's Fringe Plan development standards in the future if, the property owner ever decided to do that. So this wouldn't be, if this zoning, rezoning were approved, it wouldn't restrict that from happening in the future. That's not necessarily our intent at this time, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we meet the requirements as laid out in the county development plan. We feel like it does that. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Shapiro. Questions with him? Pretty quiet group tonight. Okay, thank you very much. We may call you back up here later. At this time, it's open for public comment. And again, if you have something you'd like to say about this case here, please step forward and give your name and address, and we'll listen to what you have to say.
Hi, Good Ames, and I'm here to represent the City of Ames on this rezoning request. As you know, the city is what is called a cooperator in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which was approved in 2006 by Story County, City of Ames, and City of Gilbert, and through an intergovernmental agreement approved a couple of years ago, we have agreed to cooperate on planning and land use and subdivision issues in the area within 2 miles of the Ames city limits. I would like to speak tonight to four issues. Our interest is primarily in whether the proposed rezoning conforms to the Story County Development Plan, which is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And there are four points I would like to make in regards to why you should deny this rezoning request. One is that the Ames Urban Fringe Plan provides for an adequate area for large lot residential development. And I'll refer to this as a large lot residential development, not try to use the word density. Also, it is not consistent with the county comprehensive plan as described in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Rezoning of this property is not the appropriate procedure to take to allow for development of a single family home on a 29-acre parcel. And fourth, that rezoning this property for residential use would increase the uncertainty for all of the property owners and residents within the Ames Urban Fringe area. I'd like to address each one of those issues. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan has as one of its principles that the preferred land uses and priority areas for growth shall be defined and delineated on a shared land use plan and map. If you have a copy of that, you can pull up here. That's good. You will point it. Thanks. So this land use framework map has been adopted by Story County and Gilbert and the City of Ames as the Ames Urban Fringe Plan land use framework map, and it has identified preferred land uses and priority areas for growth. And among those are the area here, the subject property is located here, which is designated for future growth of the City of Ames up along both sides of North Dakota Avenue along the Onion Creek. I'd also bring your attention to area here that's in light yellow, area here in light yellow, area there, and also there's several more areas south. Those are all designated for large lot residential development by the Urban Fringe Plan, and adequate land has been provided for that type of development based upon historic rates of people developing large acreages to provide locations for large lot residential development. And as the Planning and Zoning Commission, of course, you know and have experienced that usually the issue is location. Is the residential development thought, is that going to be allowed at a certain location where an applicant would like to develop the use? But there is adequate use. You can see here. All those areas are shown as expansions of the current large lot residential areas that exist within the fringe. So what the plan basically says is we should not create new pockets of large lot residential development throughout the fringe. We should rather try to consolidate it into certain areas where you already have the paved roads and the other facilities needed to support that kind of residential development. The urban services area, the area within which this zoning request was made, is designated by this plan as an urban services area, as your staff report indicates. One of the principles and policies for an urban services area in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is that these areas should be protected from any form of development that would constrain the efficient growth of the communities. Any inappropriate development includes low-density residential lots served by on-site wastewater treatment systems and other forms of rural development. In this case, low density would mean large lot residential development that is served by on-site septic systems, wells, etc. The urban services area should be protected from that form of growth. So this is an area designated to provide for growth. What your plan or our plan says is that someday Ames will grow into this area. It's not looking like it's going to happen tomorrow, but someday there will be an overpass put at the railroad tracks. Someday there will be suburban type of development happening in this area. And it's got a lot of advantages for that use in terms of the city, and infrastructure will be brought to it, sewer service lines, etc., and it will grow. It will be a place where Ames grows. And there's a couple points I want to make about that. Obviously, I'm sitting here as a representative of the city of Ames, and it's in the interest of the city of Ames for the city to have an area to grow. However, it is vital to the entire county that the city of Ames can continue to grow, because obviously the future of the county, the future of the economy, depends upon the city being able to continue to grow and provide more jobs, more services for residents of the entire county. So it's important that the communities in Story County have adequate room to grow, and that's what the Urban Fringe Plan provides for. So this is an area that will grow, and what do we mean by the suburban type of development? Well, the Urban Fringe Plan lays that out and basically says development will be from anywhere from 3.75 net units per acre to 10 units per acre. In other words, maximum lot sizes of 11,000 square feet, or lot sizes of 11,000 square feet or less, is what we can expect to see as a city grows in its suburban areas. We're talking here about a lot that is 29 acres, 16 acres, I understand, is developable. That's much bigger than the kind of development we're going to see up there someday. The applicant argues that his proposed plan will allow for development in the future of the urban residential density under the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, that it's okay to have a 16-acre lot. It'll be fine to have 11,000 square feet lots or 50 houses on the same amount of ground next door. We believe that approval of a rezoning like this will make it unlikely that the subject property itself, 16 acres of it, will be developed to the urban residential density. We'll be taking out 16 and a half acres that could otherwise grow, be part of the Ames growth, and prevent it from growing to having that kind of development. So that's an impediment. And I can assure you, and I'm sure that you've experienced this, that owners and residents of large residential acreages object to suburban-type residential development within their general area. When we talked to, and we did a few years ago, talked to the existing residents of this area along Onion Creek and North Dakota Avenue about introducing 8 units to the acre, and they just could not believe that we would have this kind of urban residence development next door to their 5, 10, 15-acre lots. That kind of ownership, that kind of development is an impediment to cities being able to expand city-type development, suburban-type development, into an area. Now, I think part of the implication here is we're just talking about one house on one parcel, but you obviously have to consider, if the county approves this rezoning, what will it do with the next rezoning request on similarly situated property, whether here or somewhere else? Can you approve one person's request, and when another person comes along whose conditions are pretty much identical, can you deny that person's request? So we have to look at this in terms of what's going to be the policy of the county moving forward. Not just is this one isolated request defensible, but is this a good policy to have to rezone areas that are designated for urban growth to be large lot rural development. As I said, the City of Ames does not object to large lot residential development. We support it. This is why we approved an urban fringe plan that provides for it being located in certain areas. We believe that it's difficult to have that kind of large lot within the city, but people who come to work in Ames, people who want to live in this kind of area, some of them want large lots, and so the rural area is a good place for that to happen, and so we've got spaces and land designated and supporting large lot residential development, as I said. The urban residential policy and the urban fringe plan on page 39 says, require annexation by the city before land is developed. Require annexation before land is developed. So we believe that clearly states that building a house on a large lot and rezoning the ground for it is directly contradictory to that policy of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The property needs to be left undeveloped until it's annexed, undeveloped for residential purposes until it's annexed. It also says, urban residential policy number 3, require urban infrastructure and subdivision standards, including urban rights-of-way, urban streets, urban sanitary and potable water systems, and urban stormwater management systems. That should all be required when development happens within the urban services area. None of that is possible now because that infrastructure would have no place to connect to. You don't have sewer mains out there. You don't have water mains out there. And so this development can't meet that standard, which is a requirement of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. So it's not consistent with the county's comprehensive plan, that is, Ames Urban Fringe Plan, to rezone this property. Also, it's not an appropriate procedure to rezone the property that's designated for future annexation and growth to allow for current rural-style development. If you believe that there is merit to a request that some of this area should be available for rural residential development before Ames annex, then the proper procedure is to modify the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the land use plan. That is the essence of a cooperative approach to land use planning. Yes, we would all have to get together and agree on a land use change. You could look at whatever portion of the area you think is appropriate, and we can move forward together to look at the implications of a policy change to change from urban residential to rural residential. However, I guess the advantage of that is that it allows the three jurisdictions to consider use of the entire area and answers the question of what would the county do if someone else wanted to rezone similarly. You would have a policy about that. However, I'm not saying the city would entertain that change or that we support it, and should be aware that the City of Ames, Story County, Gilbert are not obligated to reconsider that request. This is a policy of all three governments. They're not obligated to consider every time someone wants to make a change in the county policy. The first question is, do any of the bodies want to consider it? And then you would go into changing the urban fringe plan. That's the appropriate process to make this kind of a change. Finally, increasing uncertainty for all urban fringe area owners and residents. Before 2006, sure, we had requests. You had requests for rezoning and for subdivision, land division within the Ames Urban Fringe Area. And it was very difficult for both the county and the city to deal with those requests. The city might come to the county to make a recommendation on rezoning, or under state law, if someone wanted to divide property, they would have to also come to the city and get approval. And the city council would struggle with each case on its own merits because there was no policy. This property over here, how's it different from this property over here? This person wants to do this. Somebody else wants to do that. It was very unpredictable because there was no policy. And so each city council had to consider on its own merits what are the pluses and minuses of developing this urban or rural area? And property owners would have no idea when they started down that path. First of all, how long it would take. And secondly, on what basis the decision would be made. And so the urban fringe plan was not an easy project to complete, but the county and the city of Ames and the city of Gilbert were all committed to succeeding at an urban fringe plan, so there could be a policy that all the decision-making bodies could rely upon and base their decisions on. If we begin to act independently of that plan, if we rezone property that's designated for agricultural use until it's annexed, if we rezone it to rural residential, then that undermines the confidence that property owners and residents would have in that policy. And so that's a disadvantage. So with that, the city recommends denial of this rezoning based upon the criteria in your code about rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. What questions do we have of Jeff?
I'd like to start with your last point. A rezoning request from A1 to R1 would be consistent with the plan that's up there, because the R1 is the right zoning for that area, is it not?
Consistent with your fringe plan?
Ignoring the fact that we have one lot, a rezoning to R1 would be consistent with the plan, is it not?
No, it would not. R1 allows, first of all, you talked about the lot size. We would want to see a zoning classification that prohibits densities above 3.75 units per acre. In other words, lots larger than 11,000 square feet. The R1 lot minimum lot size is 25,000 square feet. So, as you pointed out, that's one inconsistency. Another is that there is no requirement under the county code that, well, you allow wells and septic systems, and the fringe plan says...
That's a different issue. I was just dealing with the zoning itself.
Fundamentally, the R1 zoning would allow the construction of a single-family residential home. And that home construction is development, and the property has not been annexed, and so it's inconsistent with the plan to rezone something to allow development before it's annexed. That's fundamental. Yes, and it was approved by City of Ames, Story County, City of Gilbert.
Yeah, Gilbert.
Boone County so far has not joined in on approving the plan.
So Boone County, even though that shows an area which extends into Boone County, they have not yet approved their portion.
That's correct.
Not being signatory.
Yes, but I believe that all three jurisdictions support and actively base their decisions upon the enduring range plan.
And one of the things you said created a question for our staff.
From staff standpoint, first of all, the reason that we not necessarily approve the R1 request, but the R1 zoning district also provides for minimum lot sizes of 10,000 square feet when they're on shared septic systems, shared wastewater systems, as we consider it, and that was one of the reasons I think that we did bring this forward. But discussing a plan amendment, you know, we probably have brought that up a few times in this area, but just piecemealing, just for this parcel alone, a plan amendment probably won't be appropriate, because then you start seeing spots show up on the map that really don't make sense. So and again, it would be appropriate if there was common systems put out there at some point in the future. In this particular situation, the one thing that Story County is probably hampered by is that in the urban residential area that this is considered, we do have an adopted 2080 agreement that says that Story County cannot and will not take part in any subdivision of this land. So any subdivision proposal will not be forward to the commission, but go straight to the city, and I'm pretty comfortable in saying that the city wouldn't approve it unless it was annexed inside the city first. So if there was a policy that did allow the county to review it, and we did rezone this to R1, and then we saw a subdivision plat submitted with lot sizes around 10,000 square feet, and then a shared system was proposed, at that point it would be in conformance with the urban residential district. On individual, if the site had an individual septic system, the minimum lot size is 25,000 square feet. Now, if the entire development has a shared wastewater treatment system, there's one in the county, Squaw Valley, just north of the site, has a shared wastewater system, then the minimum lot size is 10,000 square feet. Yeah. Exactly.
Other questions of Mr. Benson? You stay there if you wish. Jeff will probably call on you later. Yeah. This would be a time for other public input and comments. I saw somebody was going to stand up here earlier.
Hi, my name is Terry Goodman. I live on North Dakota Avenue, about what would be two doors down from the proposed dwelling. You're exactly right. From the standpoint of people that live in that area, they want more land, not less. That's why we moved there. It seems to me the development that's being proposed fits perfectly with what has been done in the past. What, if you look at the properties out there, I have about 4 acres. Our neighbor has 8.5. There's another one there close to me that has 3. This is how that area's grown. I'm zoned R1. I fail to see the differences. I understand you have a lot of policies and agreements and things like that, but this development, to me, seems like a very natural fit to the environment that's there. Although it may not fit a long-term planner situation, I'd say to the city of Ames, then annex us. It's time to develop that land and bring us in so that they can develop it. It seems to me if that is the sole reason why you reject this, it's the wrong direction for that community, because then what? Nothing can ever be done with that land until someone's willing to come in with a huge development, which someone tried to do a few years ago and went broke before that happened. But so to me, this is about one house on a piece of property that fits in the neighborhood, and the neighbors that I've talked to have no issues with this and seem to fit very well. But that's my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Any questions on him? I do have a question. You just mentioned go ahead and annex it. Would your neighbors hang you, or would they?
Probably. But I mean, that's the, you know, everyone's discussed that, particularly a couple of years ago, when I think it was Regency, and another developer came in, they talked about putting a, as someone defined, a low density development there. None of us obviously liked it, but we don't own the land either. So there's something to be said to that, in my opinion, for land ownership. And the fact that it is not annexed today, residents out there have a hard time understanding how the city has so much input when we can't do anything about it. I mean, we don't get any city benefits. We don't have the sidewalks. We don't have the sewer systems, the well, city water. We're on well water, those kind of things. So, yeah, my neighbors wouldn't like to hear, go ahead and annex it. But to me, that is what has to happen in order for that land to develop. Otherwise, if no one ever can build a home out there again, if 16 and a half acres is not the right number, what is the right number? To me, it just seems like that property out there is developed for these types of homes. There's several parcels that surround this particular one where you may very well get another request. There's a 35-acre parcel next to it. There's a 40-acre parcel behind it. He brings up a very valid point. What do you do with the next guy? And my opinion would be, I don't know why you would deny them either. It's their land. It's, you know, they want to build a house. But that, again, it's just my opinion.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any other public input? Okay. Hearing none, commissioners, what discussion do we have, or do we have further questions?
Our four choices again.
Supervisors, direct staff to schedule the first consideration on March 5th, 2013. I do this because I do not believe that we can show that standard number one, standard number two have been met. Standard number one clearly indicates that the land use class is meant to be an area to be annexed by the city in the foreseeable future, and that the development should include things which are compatible with both city and county development standards.
You're making a long motion.
Yeah.
Well, the motion...
How about we get a second on?
...as number three... and the reasoning is
let's go for a second first here before we discuss it. Anybody care to second it? I'll second it. Yeah, so now we can discuss it.
Could I ask what exactly it means to direct staff to schedule the consideration on March? What does that mean exactly?
The planning and zoning responsibility in this case is to provide a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. So any action that you take won't be the official action on it, but it will be a recommendation that's passed down to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors ultimately will be the one to approve or deny the request. Since it is an ordinance amendment, it's required to have three separate hearings with the Board of Supervisors subsequent weeks after that meeting, but the first consideration of what we consider would be that March 5th, and then second consideration March 12th or whatever day that would fall on, and third and subsequent after that.
Okay. Other questions? You know, I'm conflicted on this one here because I believe it's a nice piece of land to develop. I know there's a lot of work that's gone into this development, the urban fringe plan. So this is a tough one for me here.
I just don't say we're all going to be long-term debt before the city of Bay and everyone to come out there. I don't know why we're having this discussion. If we still trouble on doing investments for the county, I think we should be patting them on the back and saying, come on, come on. And I don't know why the city of Bay and is so dead against it. Other than just policy.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take.
Okay. Thank you.
Urban fringe plan was worked on by joint staff for a long time. A lot of discussion between elected officials, both the city and the county. And it is the guidance that we have for reviewing and approving requests. So even though I agree the land is ideally situated for development, and having a large lot there would be very nice for the community to develop large lot. It'd be consistent with other development in the neighborhood and everything else which has been testified to. It is still not in conformance with the direction that we've been given as a commission in reviewing the cases. And until that direction changes, I can't see a way clear to support.
If you'd care to, Mr. Speaker, stand up, just take a minute or two.
I did want to ask the commission. The city has indicated that this zoning wouldn't meet the requirements of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. So I asked the commission what zoning district would meet the city's zoning requirements.
You're asking the commission, you're probably asking the wrong people.
Yeah. Again, the R1 zoning district under shared wastewater systems would meet the Ames Urban Fringe Plan designation, and again, that's why we did it. There is also an R2 designation. The R2 designation is 10,000 square foot minimum lot size, but it requires shared septic system, so it's almost one and the same. And I think the reason when this came forward, if staff was going to propose a zoning district, it was R1, and the zoning map on Beacon here kind of shows you the R1 zoning area. This is the subject parcel right here. The yellow area is all the R1 zoned area, and again, the reason we suggest if anything was going to come forward that it would be R1, mainly because that's what's out there right now. An R2 zone parcel wouldn't really fit in with this area at all because there is no R2 out there. So, but again, the R2 just requires shared systems, where the R1 gives you the option either way. So,
thank you.
had one more thing if I could.
Okay.
And the other thing I wanted to, again, point out is obviously the Ames Fringe Plan was originally constructed with the idea that this property at the time was owned by a developer. And at the current time, it is not. It's owned by a private farmer who's not planning on developing the property. And again, it's important to point out that when the plan's put together, it's obviously a blanket over the whole area. It's not really considering individual parcels, necessarily. Whereas this parcel, based on our various requests and arguments and that, does warrant some recognition because of its low profitability and use. So lumping him in with the other 200 and some acres in the area is not necessarily the right thing to do. Again, each property owner has the right to make profit on the property, if I remember correctly, based on state law and so on. So if that's the case, and there's already been determined that this property is of low value, and the variance has already been denied because of the R1 was a possibility at the time, based on the conversations with the variance request, then I think that needs to be considered, I guess, was my only point. Thank you.
Thanks. So, I think I see how this is coming down, so I need to ask what happens if we end up with a tie. Not that that would influence my vote either way, but it just...
It would take a majority of those present to pass a motion, and so the motion on the table would fail if it was a tie. And then in the case were to come that you were unable to make it have another motion that would pass, it can go forward, but it would be gone forward without a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Okay. Any more discussion, or are we ready to vote? Okay, I think I hear no more discussion, so roll call.
Hauser? Veggie?
Nay.
Gast?
Aye.
Weigel?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said mine wrong. I'm voting in favor of the motion.
And the motion, are you clear on the motion?
Okay. Sorry, I was...
So I have Kauser is A. Peggy is A.
Yes.
Okay, Gast.
Yes.
Weigel.
Okay, motion carries. Moving on to item number 2. Sub-01-13, the Messenger Subdivision.
Okay, this is, as you had mentioned, the applicant is Dale and Dorothy Messenger, but I'll refer to this as Rolling Hills Plat 3, as that is the title on the actual subdivision plat. Property owners, you got two separate parcels here. Again, the Messengers, the applicants own one, and Mark and Lori Langle own the second one. Looking at the location, we're in the Rolling Hills subdivision area. This does include lot 32 plus parcel A in section 15 of Indian Creek Township. Address is being 30558 and 30620 Rolling Hills Drive. Size of this total area is a little over 13 acres, current zoning being R1 residential, and current land use, it is a residential land use. Looking at the land use framework, the Story County Development Plan does designate the property as rural residential area and does contain some natural areas, and this is within 2 miles of the city of Maxwell. Looking at the surrounding property owner map that we have here, you can see the parcels kind of hashed out in blue here. Includes a small parcel right there, kind of hard to see, and then the larger parcel to the south here. That'll show up a lot better on the actual plat that we have here next. But looking at the nature of the request, the applicant is to consider a minor subdivision plat of one lot and one parcel that are being adjusted in size and will conclude into developed lots in the R1 residential district. Keyword developed, they're already developed lots. plating consideration, the subdivision is being reviewed as a final subdivision plat, and the Planning and Zoning Commission does provide a recommendation on this plat to the Board of Supervisors. The proposed plat is listed here on the screen above. Again, you can see the large parcel here, the smaller parcel here. I've kind of zoomed into the main adjustment area. The old lot line kind of goes straight east to west right here. That proposed lot line is proposed to shift just slightly to the southeast and be kind of a more angular lot line there. I think these pictures will kind of show you exactly what we're looking at. This is the house on the parcel that is proposed to be enlarged. If you look at the parcel here, the house actually would be kind of just up in this area, but the current lot line, you can kind of see, follows this area right here, and they're proposing to adjust this and to bring this land right here, which is currently belongs to the house, that would be kind of down this area, but they're proposing to bring this land and to be associated with that house there. This kind of shows, again, that area with the house just to the north there. And again, the house from a view down a little bit south. In the staff report, we had all the applicable regulations listed regarding the subdivision plat. Staff did make a few notes regarding those regulations. First, that the written and signed statements of the appropriate officials of the availability of water, gas, and electricity to the proposed subdivision and the letter of acknowledgement from the applicable fire chief were not submitted with this application, as the proposal is just an adjustment of current lot lines between two existing lots and parcels. More importantly, again, there is going to be no new development on this lot, so anything that is out there is pretty much existing. It is just a division or an adjustment of lot lines. Contours were waived on the subdivision plat by the interagency review team. The setbacks from existing structures were not shown. However, staff was able to confirm through GIS that all setbacks from the existing structures will remain satisfied with the proposed subdivision plat. The R1 zoning district, which this land to be subdivided is located on, was not shown on the plat as being in that zoning district. And lastly, easements of not less than 15 feet in width that shall be provided on each side of all rear lot lines and all our side lines where necessary for poles, wires, conduits, and storm utilities. Those were not shown on the plat. Staff just wanted to make one quick note on that, though, that particular requirement may not be necessary as the subdivision is already developed out and there is no new development proposed with this plat. More importantly, there would be no development that would be allowed with this plat, again, as we do have all these current lots having single-family dwellings located on them. There was one comment of interest, I should say, from the interagency review team, and that came from the auditor's office. First of all, they mentioned that because this is a subdivision, parcels H and I, which are listed on the plat right now, those actually should be lots 1 and 2. We don't like to call those parcels when we're referring to subdivision plats, so that's just a quick change that hopefully the surveyor can make before this is brought forward to the Board of Supervisors. They also mentioned that it is not necessary to have a written description on the individual lots in a subdivision, but they may certainly be included. Only a description of the perimeter of the subdivision is required. I think that's just more of a commentary thing from their office. And then lastly, on the third line of description for parcel H, the dimension needs to be changed on there. So with that, your four alternatives are on the screen here above, and I would be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Questions of Charlie? I have one. It seems like you had some cleanup items on here about the ones you just mentioned and stuff like that. Will those be taken care of normally in the plat, or we don't need to make them as conditions or anything, do we?
Typically what the Planning and Zoning Commission has done in the past is made them as conditions and just put conditions that need to be satisfied before the Board of Supervisors reviews them. And a majority of the time, some of these changes that we're asking for on here can be done in a day's time. They're really minor. Most of those plats are already drawn up in files and stuff, and the surveyors have them. They just have to change the verbiage on some stuff. So
you're saying they should be...
And ultimately, that's up to you if you want to do it that way or not, but, yeah. In the past, that's how the commission has done it.
Okay. Thank you.
You've made it just a little difficult in this case because you've listed five things and have indicated in the staff analysis that three of them aren't needed, and number four probably should be there, and I can't figure out whether number five is needed or not, because the easement, you say, is needed on side and lot lines where necessary for poles, wires, conduits, or storm utilities. I have absolutely no idea whether it's necessary or not.
Yeah, I mean...
What is the staff recommendation concerning easements?
Well,
should they be there or should they not be there?
I mean, we don't typically make recommendations. That's why I didn't really mention anything in the staff report. I guess my opinion would be that they're probably not necessary, again, because the subdivision is already built out. And typically that stuff we want on plats where there are going to be new houses placed on these lots for those reasons. And, again, we don't have any of those being proposed. So I don't necessarily think that they are a necessary requirement. But if the commission would like to see them, then ultimately up to you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you. Is the applicant here? You go step forward, please.
Hi, my name is Mark Lengel, and I live at 30620 Rolling Hills Drive.
Do you have any concerns with the auditor's requirements that they be lot 1 and 2 and that the dimension be corrected?
It doesn't matter to me if it's lot 1 or 2. Dimensions, if they need to be corrected, they should be corrected.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Lindell? Anything you'd like to say? I'm not going to keep you up in here in agony if you don't want to be.
To me, it's pretty simple. Pretty cut and dry.
Yeah. Is it going to be a garden or a swimming pool?
Could be both. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any comments from the public? Now's the time. Okay. Hearing none. Discussion here on the commissioners. A motion?
I'd like to move number two with the conditions that the auditor's corrections be made.
Second. Okay, seconded by Kelzer. Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Peggy.
Aye.
Miller. Oh, sorry, Miller's not here. Gass.
Aye.
Weigel. Kelzer.
Aye.
Okay, motion approved as passed. Thank you for being here. And I will move on to item number three. Ryan, if you'd come forward. This is CPU 01-13 Allen. Thank you.
Good evening. As already stated, this is regarding CUP 01-13, also known as the Allen Conditional Use Permit Request. The proposed use of that's up for discussion is a child care center. The applicant is Andrew and Holly Allen, who will reside at the property in Palestine Township, Section 13, at the corner of Timber Lane and Ridgewood Drive, adjacent to the city of Huxley. The size of the area is 1.15 gross acres, currently zoned A1 agriculture, and current land use, prior to 2012, it was ag classification, but now it's going to be classified as residential as it contains a single-family dwelling that's currently being built. You'll see pictures of that here shortly. The land use framework map designation is cooperative planning area tier 1, and the city within 2 miles is the city of Huxley. Here you see the surrounding property owner map that was mailed to all property owners within a quarter mile of the subject property, which is highlighted there in red, as you can see, and all the surrounding property owners are highlighted in blue. As you get north there, Timber Lane Avenue turns into 550th, as you can see on the map. And just west of the property is the city of Huxley. Just a little background on the request is a conditional use permit to allow for an in-home child care center, Ms. Holly's preschool. Child care center is defined in our ordinance as a facility providing child care or preschool services for seven or more children, except when the facility is registered as a child development home. The center is currently in operation out of Grace E. Free Church in Huxley. They are licensed by the Department of Human Services and part of Iowa's statewide voluntary preschool program. The preschool accommodates mostly four-year-olds and some three-year-olds. The new site will have a capacity for 20 students and will operate 12 hours per week, 3 hours per day, 4 days per week, Monday through Thursday, and will operate out of the lower level walkout basement of the house being built on the site. Just a couple of pie shots here. You can see the view of the current single family house being built on the property. This is a view to the east from Timber Lane Avenue. This is to the southeast from the corner of the property, and that's a view to the southwest development area directly onto the city of Huxley, and they're directly west of the property across the street, and then north as you go into 550th Avenue. Looking at conditional use permits, there's several criteria that must be reviewed and met in order for it to be approved, as you can see there, and I'll go through each one individually. First one is regarding to compatibility with surrounding land uses. Staff notes that in-home child care centers are generally compatible with residential areas. The proposed child care center will be located inside the single-family dwelling being built on the property, as already stated. While this building site has been converted from ag land, this area is experiencing heavy development and is surrounded by residential land. The applicant has stated the child care center will be in operation only 12 hours a week, 3 hours a day. They noted from 8:30 to 11:30, 4 days per week, Monday through Thursday. Generally speaking, staff notes that nearby residents will be at work during this time and will therefore not experience any excess noise that may be generated from children playing outside or the proposed use. The size of the child care center will be limited to 20 students given the constraints of the licensure requirements and the physical size of the child care center area. It is the opinion of staff that the child care center of this scale does not warrant any mitigation of nuisances created from the proposed use. Looking at transition between the proposed use of the property, any buffering that may be necessary between the proposed property and surrounding properties. Staff notes that the child care center will operate in the walkout basement of the rear of the dwelling to the east. Therefore, outside of drop-off and pickup, the use will be buffered from Timber Lane Drive by the dwelling itself. While most of the use will be located indoors, there's little vegetation, around the perimeter of the property that provides some buffer between the properties to the north, south, and east. Further, staff notes any sort of outdoor play or recreation equipment used by the child care center is compatible with residential uses. There's only fencing on the east and south side of the property, and while the dwelling on the property to the north is over 100 feet from the property line, staff is unclear if this provides suitable buffer from children playing outside and potential encroachment on the property to the north without further information from the applicant. Looking at issues with traffic parking and loading, ingress and egress for the use will be provided through the driveway on Timber Lane Drive. Story County engineers raised concerns regarding adequate parking during loading and unloading. Concerns regarding on-street stopping or parking, which would not be allowed without street modifications, which are under the purview of the City of Huxley as they maintain Timber Lane Drive. The county engineer is not confident that either wraparound drive proposed is adequate to accommodate traffic during peak load-in, load-out times, enough to prevent stopping or parking on Timber Lane Drive without a more detailed explanation from the applicant. the required maximum parking for a child care center, according to our ordinance, is one space for every employee, which in this case would be two, and one loading space for each six children. Looking at issues with size and lighting and environmental protection, staff notes that no signage or lighting in excess of the normal residence is proposed with this use. The proposed use should have little, if any, impact on vital or environmental resources in the area beyond a normal residential use. So if the commission concludes that all those above development criteria are met, it must recommend approval to the Board of Adjustment unless it concludes that if completed as proposed, there is a strong probability that the development will not adequately safeguard health, safety, and welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining surrounding property, impair an adequate supply of light or air to surrounding properties, unduly increase in congestion of the roads or hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values, not be in accord with the intent, purpose, or spirit of the land development regulations or county development plan. Staff just notes that the lack of proper fencing to the north for the outdoor play area perhaps does call into question whether the proposal adequately safeguards the health, safety, and welfare of surrounding properties due to liability issues regarding children potentially wandering off the child care center property. This may be addressed by the applicant through other means, but has not been provided to staff at this point. And just a note that the burden of persuasion on all conditional use permits is that of the applicant, and the burden of presenting evidence to the Board of Adjustment sufficient enough for it to conclude that the applicant does not comply with the requirements is upon the person or persons recommending such a conclusion. Just one noted interagency review comment, as already stated, the county engineer had some concerns regarding parking on site. On 110, we received an email from him, and I'll just read through them if that's okay. I still have concerns about adequate parking. I've informed Mr. Allen, the applicant, that parking will not be allowed on the public roadway. I do not think that Mr. Allen will be able to control parking on the roadway unless provides enough parking on his property. I believe that there will be times when the number of parking spaces needed will allow the number of students enrolled. The City of Huxley is responsible for maintenance of this portion of the roadway, and they will not allow parking on the roadway. After those concerns were brought to the applicant, they came with a second proposed driveway. I'll show you pictures of both here in just a moment. And then pertaining to that second proposed driveway, the county engineer noted that it looks better, but knowing how most preschools work, almost all the parents park and walk the kids in every day. If this happens and they have 20 students, I'm still not convinced that this layout will be adequate. Mr. Allen will have to explain to the commission how this will work. It appears that an existing drive wraps around the house to the south side. Is this parking in the back a possibility? And then a further email follow-up was that he said, I did talk to Huxley again, and they just verified that if any street modifications needed to be made, they would need to be involved in that discussion since they are responsible for maintenance. It would probably be safe to say that if Mr. Allen wants to consider any kind of street modifications to allow street-side parking, the discussion about annexation would come up, which is understandable if he wants that kind of city service. Given these circumstances, if Mr. Allen does not want to be annexed, off-street parking will need to be provided. And here you can just see the two proposed driveways. This was the first one provided with the application, and this was a follow-up just to compare to Mr. Moon's comments. Notification and surrounding property owner notifications were sent out for this request, and when the staff report was written, we had yet to receive comments from the public, but this morning we did receive a letter from the property owner to the north, Mr. Art Severed, which I can read into the record, if that's okay with you. I did provide copies. I think you all had a chance to already read it, but I'll just read it into the record.
Okay.
he states, I strongly protest the approval of this preschool permit. I sold this parcel of land with the understanding that the new residential home would be built on it, not a commercial building. This is already a congested area with three busy housing developments. This parcel is located on Timber Lane, the only street which is a mere 28 feet in width, leading north out of Huxley. The street goes through the city park and school athletic field. Many times the street is bottled up with traffic. This would be akin to permitting a gas station or grocery store in the middle of this upper class and expensive homes. A heavy traveled school should be in commercial part of town. If the school is permitted, there will be much noise, such as cars running, doors slamming, turning around and honking, and parking on the street. There will be a lot of school noise and commotion in the area. This school is very close to the street and within a few feet of my property line and approximately 75 feet from my home and small acreage, which holds machinery and livestock at times. I've lived here for 50 of my 80 years and hope to have peace and quiet during my last years. I have a protective dog that will bark and bark next to a school playground. There's an old woman living with me that is in advanced stages of dementia. She gets upset and scared with any different or loud noises. She would be out staring and conversing with the small children. Lastly, and unfair is the fact that my property will be devalued by 50%, yet I must pay real estate taxes on present value. With regard to Planning and Zoning Commission recommendation on applications, when presented to the commission, the application shall be accompanied by a report, which I've outlined to you this evening, and any recommendations for requirements or conditions be imposed on the proposed development by the Board of Adjustment. At this point, staff recommends the following conditions be placed on the conditional use permit for purposes of discussion. First, that no conditional use permit shall be issued prior to receiving a certificate of occupancy from the State Fire Marshal. No parking or stopping of vehicles on Timber Lane Drive at any time. And finally, that the Board of Adjustment shall review the permit after 1 year from approval to monitor any issues with traffic during load-in and load-out and adjust or revoke the permit accordingly. They will also determine at that time if any further review shall be necessary in the future. With that, I leave you with the following four alternatives, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ryan. Questions of Ryan?
That sounds good, but is there any really teeth in that? Yeah.
If at that time, and there's precedent for this, there's several conditional use permits out there that are up for annual or biannual review. If at that time there are any issues that can't be mitigated through further conditions or modifications to the conditional use permit, it can be come up for revocation, in which case the use would not be allowed. And any further use in that way would result in enforcement.
That's ever come up?
I can't think of an instance where that has come up in the past. I mean, generally, if knowing that that's a potential, the property owner is going to do what they can to not make it an issue. So.
A question about the. Number two up there, it looks like it's more of a law or an ordinance than it should be part of the conditional or a condition. For me, I just didn't see that out of there. But I think an ordinance, the city ordinance or county ordinance, will take care of that more than having to be in this thing here.
Except that it's not in the ordinance, and the that's a road that's maintained by City of Huxley. So,
the road itself is in the unincorporated area, or is the road itself in within the city?
My understanding, I think there's an official from the City of Huxley here to speak this evening, so perhaps he can clarify. But I think the west half is city, the east half is unincorporated. However, there's an agreement between the city and the county as far as maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance is one issue, but yeah. Establishing a no parking zone falls within county or city jurisdiction. Has the county on any rural roads ever established a no parking zone?
My understanding is that currently there's a no parking zone on Timberland Drive as it fronts this property. I don't think there's signage, and it came up in the discussion that the city may have to place more signage to signify that. But it's my understanding that currently there is no parking. But just to take that a step further to ensure that there's no parking or stopping in front of the property with the proposed use, that was the purpose of the recommendation.
You also have, under staff comments, concerns of the fencing for an outside play area, but I did not see anything.
Yeah, we thought that it, and the applicant is here tonight to provide, you know, further information, that we just didn't have enough information about their plans or what they might do to mitigate that issue, and so thought it would be best to have them discuss that first and see if that was important enough after that to add another condition.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. Okay.
Clarify for me on the driveway issue,
yeah.
Whether that is something that we have to put in an amendment, or is that already in his permit, or as far as the driveway?
See, as far as what is proposed, it's still unclear to the county engineer whether or not what you see here will adequately allow for peak load in and load out with the daycare. Now, the applicant, like I said, is here. I believe he's going to provide more information regarding any sort of plans they have for getting kids in and out of their cars at 8:30 and then back in at 11:30. And so it would be up to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment to determine whether or not that's enough information to ameliorate any concerns.
That's already in the permit, and we don't have to amend our recommendation to include that.
If it comes up in discussion, I mean, it's definitely something that you would want to look at as far as recommending an approval or denial or adding any other conditions in order to.
I know what you're saying.
Maybe I'm not understanding.
Driveway, as on that document, that would be part of the permit, and that would already
that would allow the use to or if it went to the Board of Adjustment and they agreed and approved number one, then as proposed, the conditional use permit would be allowed. So this drive as proposed.
Well, we see what everybody else has got to say here, and I think maybe it'll become clear as we hear more about the. Anything else? Thanks, Ryan. The applicant, you step forward and give your name and address.
Yeah, thanks so much. Andrew Allen, lifetime resident of Story County. Soon to occupy 118 Timber Lane, but currently in South Ames on South Duff. So I feel I'm in agreement with what was proposed by Ryan. I think he did a good job of summarizing. He did clue me into the city engineer's concerns about parking. So I do have an addendum. I don't know if I can provide that to you now.
Sure. Anything that's helpful is always good.
I've got three copies, but you'll be able to see on the second proposed driveway, and let me just address load in and load out. Maximum capacity for the site will be 20 kids. You know, that is the very most. We're in our first year of operation, and currently we've got capacity for 16.
5 of the 16 carpool. So we would expect, you know, we couldn't predict how many are actually going to be driving and dropping their kids off next year, but you might say a third of the kids will probably be ride sharing of some sort. We also talked a little bit about accommodating 20 potential cars all at once. I went ahead and I took the average dimensions of a car and kind of placed them on that. Again, it's not a professionally done engineered drawing. The site plan is I've drawn in the driveway, and I positioned 20 cars just that you can see. The idea would be you have parking along the outside, which could accommodate 10 cars, and then a passing lane on the inside. If by chance 20 people all showed up at once and they parked side by side by side by side, that drawing at least shows that it could accommodate 20. What we'd like to propose, because I think it makes sense that we don't want 20 cars all showing up at once, is that we have two stages of loading. So we would contact parents, decide who would be appropriate to come at, say, 8:20, from 8:20 to 8:10, have one group of 10 kids, and then a second group from 8:30 to 8:40. And then it would be the same thing on pickup. We'd have one group, half of the class, come 10 minutes early, and the other half of the class comes 10 minutes later. As it relates to the fence, I do think we've got short-term plans to put in and enclose the back of this facility. So my neighbor to the north's concerns about kids wandering off, that will be protected by a fence, and we'd actually have enclosed on the western portion as well. Definitely open to neighbors' concerns. I've got some in the room today, so we might get to hear from them, but, you know, really willing to work with the neighbors. I sure feel like this is a property that's going to be an asset to the community that's going to, in my estimation, would increase property value. We are working with the Department of Human Services, who licensed this site. They've already licensed Miss Holly's preschool at the Grace E. Free Church. We're kind of familiar with occupancy, and it really hinges upon the fire marshal. So right now, one of the requirements is an ADA-accessible bathroom, and we're rearranging the plans to accommodate that. At the point that the plans are finalized, that will be submitted to the fire marshal's office for occupancy. Let's see. And this is county property. Obviously, we're here in the county today. Thanks for your service. I talked to Stephen in the elevator. Sounds like you guys get paid pretty well. But kidding aside, appreciate your service and doing this. You guys are making some tough decisions. Had worked with the city of Huxley. It is adjacent to the city. There was some discussion about annexation. We really wanted to create a farm-like atmosphere in this preschool. While it is surrounded by residential, on the south and the east is a 16 or 19-acre property that grazes sheep and is what feels like a farm. If you know anything about the Berry Patch, that's where my wife, Miss Holly, went to preschool. And so we hope to create that same sort of farm-like environment here. So it was important to us that we remained in the county in order to accomplish that. We do have an annexation agreement with the county, such that if two right now to the west, on the left side of the sheet, is the street, and that would be adjacent to the city. If two of the other three sides of the properties, to the north, east, or south, become annexed, we will agree to come into the city. And if we come into the city under the annexation agreement, we've got, you know, several things that are going to happen, one of which would be, assuming the state has licensed the preschool, we'll be able to operate the preschool. So we've got a pre-approval for the preschool should it ever go into the city. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
You talked about fencing in the backyard. Would the fence run along the property line? Would it be inset from the property line ways to corral the munchkins a little bit?
To keep them away from the people that might be reaching. I guess I would just do whatever I was bound by. My intention would be to put it on the property line, just like the one to the south and the east. But I'd be happy to move it in if somebody had a concern.
Other questions?
Any plans for any vegetation, like some bushes back there?
Well,
Yeah, you bet. Along the entire south side of the property are, I would say, 4 to 5 foot trees that will completely block that. I think as the staff recommendation or summary stated, you're pretty well insulated from the western side, given the separation between the house and the backyard. To the north, along the entire, from the street to the house, are, I would say, 15-foot cedar trees. Just behind, they maybe go 10 feet to the east of the garage. So the back half, I guess, facing to the east, you're kind of looking southeast here. To the east is, there's not a lot back there, but that's where the sheep are grazing. The farmer that lives back there might be able to see. The only major concern, I think, would be, and I can't imagine that it is a concern, but on the north side of the property, on the east end, there's not much there. But also happy to add shrubbery or trees as desired.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thanks.
At this time, we'll take public comment. So if you would like to speak to this, please step forward to the... Okay, who's going to go first?
Hi. Roger Larson, 307 Ridgewood, Huxley. I'm just up the street to the west. I've got a few questions and a few comments. I'll address the questions to you guys, then you can redirect from there. Does the city of Huxley exercise the zoning authority over this property via 28E agreement?
I have to ask staff.
Yeah.
Nope. Okay.
So there's no 2-mile buffer like there are with other communities?
It's for subdivision review.
Subdivision, okay. Was this request routed through City of Huxley Planning and Zoning? I guess if there's no intergovernmental agreement, probably not.
There is notification.
There is notification.
City of Huxley is aware of.
Was the Planning and Zoning folks aware of that?
Yes.
When I talked to Chairman of that, Mike Schoenhorst, he said he was unaware last week.
You mean the Commissioner?
The Chair of the Planning and Zoning for City of Huxley.
I believe... City staff is notified, and I believe one of the staff is here this evening.
Right. I'm talking about the commensurate board at the city level to these folks. So he said he wasn't aware of this. It was the first he had heard of it. If the property is a residence, shouldn't it be rezoned as residential and pay appropriate taxes? Ag land, I think, is pays less. Correct? No? No? Okay. If ag land, excuse me, I got a cold. If ag land now, it's going to have a residence on it and function as commercial, so it seems kind of all over the board in terms of that. Was this use included in the original building permit?
That would be a static range.
This came to our attention when the original building permit was presented, and we informed the applicant that they would need to apply for a conditional use permit for the child care center in order for that to be allowed on the property.
Shouldn't that have been resolved back at the time then? Rather than 30 days prior to move in?
It's
a little late.
Pardon?
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Zoning permits are issued for properties that have that allow for that particular use. At the time, A1 zoning district allows for a single family dwelling. And so we issued a zoning permit for the single family dwelling. Additionally, A1 zoning district does allow for child care centers. as a conditional use permit. So that's the purpose of this hearing.
If it's allowed to proceed, it'll operate as a business. Will it meet commercial building and fire code requirements, ADA, sprinklers, fire escapes, etc.?
I think Mr. Allen can answer that, but I think that's part of the deal. So would you care to step up to the microphone and just answer, please?
Yeah, sure. As that was, you know, working closely with the fire marshal's office, we sought all the requirements. There's some things that preclude us from having to have sprinkler, two exits, some of the windows, but the fire marshal, the entity that will approve final occupancy. So, yes, ADA is included.
Thank you.
Good. I guess the other thing is it's effectively and for all practical purposes part of the city of Huxley. I know it falls in the county zoning area, but it ties into city water, sewer, enters onto a city street, and into an existing subdivision. And so I guess it seems incompatible with that. There were some covenants with the subdivision, and it seems like those should apply as well. I know those aren't the same as ordinances and all the zonings, but it seems like that should be tied in as well. I mean, it's functionally part of our neighborhood. I guess in the covenants, it's section B1E, specifically prohibits offensive trade. No obnoxious or offensive trade shall be carried on upon any lot, nor shall anything be done thereon which may be or become an annoyance or nuisance to the adjacent properties or any neighborhood. And it goes on from there, which, you know, isn't relevant here. And then I also had concerns about the traffic drop off and all that as well. I guess I would recommend denial of this, like the other landowner that wrote in, that was read into the record earlier. So, concerns about property valuation down the road as well. So, that's all I've got.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Larson? Okay, thank you for coming forward. Next.
Good evening. My name is Bradley Wargo. I live at 305 Ridgewood Drive, just right next door to Roger. I can tell you that I am recently relocated to the area. I moved here about 18 months ago, and I'm a physician at McFarland Clinic, and I had the opportunity to tour many communities, and I did look at Gilbert, Ames, and Huxley, as well as other districts. And I can tell you I specifically chose the neighborhood that I chose because of its neighborhood, that it's a single dwelling family homes and not business. And I have big personal concerns about, you know, the traffic flow into this area, because despite his concerns about the time of days when he's in operation, that is still a very busy street. And while he believes that there are most people are at work at that time, there are a lot of stay-at-home families that do have a lot of children still in the neighborhood. So I have concerns about that as well, in addition to potential decreased property values for myself. I welcome him to the neighborhood. I'm glad he built a house there, but I don't think he should be operating a business there. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Wargo? Thank you, sir. Anybody else like to come forward?
Justin Moore, I'm the zoning administrator for the city of Huxley. There was a point made earlier about parking, or a question on parking, and at this time the city of Huxley has no plans to alter or modify the no parking status along the street there out front. So,
what is the status?
It's a no parking.
Okay.
All up and down.
Okay, thank you.
Both sides.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carolyn Romer. I live at 30657 Deer Drive. It is a subdivision just adjacent to this property. It's just inches out of the city limits. It's 37 houses in there, and that traffic comes directly in and out right past his house. And so you have a better visual. On one side of the road, of this road of where he's building this house, it's a beautiful house, and it fits in with the golf course. The houses on the golf course side there, Ballard Golf Course, it fits in. It's beautiful. Property on each side of him are farmers who've held out and not sold property there, and now they've sold him a piece of property. So he's stuck in between these two guys that have been there forever. But yet, Huxley has paved that road and has come up to right to where Deer Creek starts and begins there. My concern in the beginning was the traffic there all day long. And I have a question, just to my clarification. Your school gets out at 11:30? Your school gets out at 11:30 in the morning?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Also, just a clarification, operate as a school year, so 9 months a year.
Okay.
September to June.
Okay. Again, though, my concern is that across the street from him is this very large development that has beautiful homes in it, and we have a neighborhood next to him that has 36 houses that offers only one way in and one way out, and that's right past his house that he's building and wanting to have a business there. In defense of with Mr. Larson and those people that live there, those houses are... I agree. They moved there for a reason and built expensive homes there. And Mr. Allen's home does fit in, but I don't believe that a business fits into that environment. And my other concern is the traffic coming in and out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have to come forward.
Sorry about that. Just two other brief comments. One other concern is that wasn't even talked about in the presentation is directly across the street from this property is a large, or I should say a large pond that is not fenced in, and there's no protection to that. So if any children were to wander across, there's a pond directly across the street from them that is available. I don't know if you guys have it on map. The other issue is that, you know, presently they're operating or planning on operating 8:30 to 11:30. Well, that's presently. What if they decide to have an afternoon shift, and now they want to have 20 kids in the afternoon also? Well, then that traffic flow is throughout the entire day at different times. And again, that just makes the problem even worse. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for stepping forward.
Name's Pete Romer, 30657. Deer Drive and Deer Creek, and just to add to my wife, we have some very heavy traffic there. There's a number of programs, such as track meets and so on, that completely inundate that whole area with traffic. It comes down as you come down 69, just as you start to approach into the new development. Those areas are completely packed with traffic. There's a park and a little further to the south, and with volleyball and or soccer and the rest of it, that produces a tremendous amount of traffic. So my concern is that the issue of parking and traffic, for me, I'm further enough away from it that I won't hear the noise per se. But I think that's going to be a huge problem. We're part of the Homeowners Association for Deer Creek, and we're running into problems with people who park their vehicles just right on the road going through the backside of Ballard to go fishing or whatever else. And they also run around into our road as well. And that whole area is extremely narrow. And I think it's going to be a problem. I guess the same thing as well is that when I saw the house going up, it's a beautiful home. It looked like it is designed as a home. I don't think it should be a business. It's between two other property owners that have heavy equipment sitting around there, some abandoned equipment as well, some bad fencing, other animals that are in that particular area. I don't think it's suitable for children. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Romer. Anybody else? Okay. Commissioners, any further questions that we need to ask of anybody? I do have one. Go ahead, and I'll ask mine.
I have a question for Justin.
What was your last name, Justin? I didn't quite...
Moore.
Moore.
M-O-R-E. Thank you. You've seen the site plans with the driveway, the two driveway alternatives. And it appears to me as though the second one with the broad U-shaped drive would have the driveways just slightly offset from the street that tees in from the west. Would that be correct?
Yes. From our review, our public works director's review, yeah, they would not intersect or come on to Timber Lane directly across from Ridgewood.
And from your public works director's review, would that be the preferable way to put driveways next to an intersection like that?
That I couldn't tell you.
Okay. So you didn't look at it from that perspective.
No.
The pond across the street appears to be in the backyard of a lot of lots, and none of those lots are developed. What is the plan for that area? As it develops, will that pond be filled in, or...
It, as far as the pond itself, as those lots develop onto the west, it would be it would have water in it. It would be a retention pond of sorts.
So it would stay as a retention water retention area.
Correct. Yes.
In the backyard of a lot of lots.
Yes.
Question was, or statement was made concerning covenants. I believe this is an unplatted area, and so to your knowledge, would the covenant apply to this lot?
As far as covenants are concerned, it would not, especially being outside of the city limits, and any covenants that we do have in the city does not help enforce or have any.
I don't believe our staff does either. That would be an issue for private property owners.
Right, yeah. Correct.
Thank you.
That was my question about covenants, and maybe I'll ask that of Ryan. We don't get involved in covenants, is that correct?
Nope, strictly a civil issue.
Okay.
When the subdivision comes in, if there are going to be covenants, we do require them to be filed with the plat, but we do not have any business with enforcement.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Larson?
My comment with regard to the covenants was just that in order to build there, Mr. Wargo bought his house, it was already built. I built mine, and in the purchase of the lot, I had to agree to the covenants. And my point being that this opens up into the neighborhood, which was governed by that and shaped its development and the type of houses. Certainly the house is commensurate with that. I don't feel that the business is in accord with that. That was my point on that. Not, I understand covenants are different than ordinances and all of like that. Maybe to touch a little bit on your question about the driveway, I do work for the DOT. When we align driveways, we typically try to have them opposite the street on the other side, driveways or other streets. I don't know if you can bring up my property. My driveway comes off the opposite of the street,
as well when they're laid it out. So I know the value of that. So I guess hopefully that talks to your question a little bit. So
thank you. Mr. Allen?
Sir, not rebuttal by any means. I appreciate my new neighbors coming out and hearing their concerns because at the end of the day, whether the home-based business operates there or not, will be neighbors. I sure don't see this as commercial. I see this as a home-based business. I think all over town there's home-based child care centers. This isn't even a child care center, really, because it's 3 hours a day, 4 days a week, preschool. But I appreciate hearing what they have to say. Had I known that there'd be four people speaking against this, I probably could have brought four or more people who would speak in favor of this. We've actually signed up many of the kids from the neighborhood already who will be attending preschool at this location, should you and the other authority approve it. Thanks.
I guess kind of makes for an awkward argument back and forth, doesn't it?
As long as you have the microphone.
I guess home-based business, call it what you want, it's still a business. It's commercial. My wife and I bought the house next to the Methodist Church in Huxley. Prior to us owning it, it was operated as WeCare Daycare Center. And when we bought it, that use of the property went away. It became residential. It sits in a residential neighborhood. The city at the time saw the value of not letting that use continue, that it was incompatible. And I guess I kind of know from personal experience there, too, compatibility, and that was rescinded when we bought it, not that I wanted to operate a daycare. So, and I guess as far as bringing people in, quantities of people for and against, I understand your position. It's not a popularity contest or a simple vote. If what's good for the neighborhood and what's in accord with zoning as well. So I guess I appreciate that.
Thank you. Well, commissioners, any further questions? Okay, last chance here. Give your name again, please.
Carolyn Romer.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind everyone that he does have a place for his business. It doesn't have to be in his home. And he's operating somewhere else already. So that, I think, should be taken into consideration. So it's not that he's going to try to start a new business. He has one, and it's located somewhere else.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody for a motion or just want to have some discussion here first?
Them up again, the four.
Chair, can I make a motion? Then I will. I'm going to move. Alternative number two, that we approve it with conditions. And the conditions, I would say, are still number one, still number three. And I would reword condition number two to say, pending resolution with the county of the county engineer of the parking and traffic issue. Pending resolution with the county of the parking and traffic issue. Second by Weigel. Okay, we're open for discussion.
I think I'm just confused. So, number one is conditional approval. Number two is approval. But we put conditions on the approval. I'm just lost.
It's a conditional use permit.
Number one is conditional approval.
Yeah. In this case, so I put the number one.
Thank you. Yeah.
Have proposed conditions.
Thank you. And those are
pardon me,
so the same three conditions, but maybe a little bit different wording on the traffic and.
Yeah, you're going with number one.
And I'm voting wrong. I'm giving the wrong.
Because that's renumbered.
So, open for discussion.
Well, I'm a bit surprised that the opposition, I'm a livestock producer, and we come under a lot of scrutiny, and I feel like, gosh, when did our children become a nuisance? I think this is a school, not a daycare. You're only talking about a few hours a day. You're talking about a little bit of traffic, but a few minutes a day. I'm a little surprised at this reaction. Give it a chance. I think you'll find that it's not near what you envision, that it's going to make your neighborhood a worse place to be. I don't believe that, and that's not what I'm voting on. I'm voting on whether it meets the criteria for the permit. That's strictly what we vote on, whether it meets the criteria or it doesn't meet the criteria. And whether it needs personal opinion or not is really not what I'm voting on. But I'm just making that personal comment that I'm a bit surprised.
Now we're just in the voting right now. So, but thank you. We could go on all night, I think.
Yeah, we have criteria that we have to examine. To see whether or not the conditional use permit meets the requirements. We also have to examine or to conclude that the development will safeguard general welfare, not unduly increase congestion and not diminish or impair property values. And I think these are all concerns of the neighbors and valid concerns. One of the conditions which you've included is addresses Nancy's issue that give it a chance. You have 1 year in order to be a good neighbor, or you lose the opportunity to have a business there. I think that good fences also make good neighbors, and the applicant would be served well in taking into consideration setting back the fencing, providing plantings to buffer the activity as much as possible so he can improve his standing in the neighborhood. That is not a requirement that has been put on by the motion, and I will not add it as a requirement. It's just good common sense. So I concur and am ready to vote.
David, do you see? Okay. Roll call.
Gaff?
Yes.
Weigel?
Yes.
Towser?
Yes.
Beggy?
Yes. And it passes. Thank you all. I appreciate all of you coming out and giving your input.
And this is a recommendation to the Board of Adjustment.
Okay. Would you like to say something? You've been so quiet all night. Oh, yeah.
I don't know where you are on the agenda. I don't have an agenda in front of me. Oh, long range plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wow.
Long range planning update.
I'm surprised that the driveways are allowed to be offset so closely to that street that tees in, or the county engineer recommended that that take place. That's a traffic concern.
And I'll pass that on to the engineer. I think the way the motion is worded, there's going to be opportunity for additional dialogue with him for ultimate approval.
And make sure that Huxley is happy with it also, because it's their street. So.
I was going to actually talk about in staff comments the budget work session, but I'll just use that as part of long-range planning because it really does fit nicely into that. At your next meeting, and you will have a meeting in March, staff will be presenting the calendar year 2013 work program. We have finalized it on our end, and it's now going to go before the Board of Supervisors for their discussion and action next Tuesday. The delay is we wanted to get through our budget work session in the early part of January and get when we were directed to prepare the budget this year, we were given some guidance to incorporate recommendations from the Government Restructuring Committee report as well as the CPAT report in our budget. And those do not necessarily make it through our budget, but they are in different forms, and I'll get to that shortly. I just want to quickly tell you 10 items. Sorry, I haven't counted that. I think I just guessed that number. 10 items are in our work program that are projects that are being directed by the Board of Supervisors that we undertake as a staff beginning now and on even past this calendar year. And in some level, U.S. Commission members may well be involved. One, Story County is going to embark likely in March on a very ambitious project to actually have a capital improvements plan and program put in place. That will be guided large in part by our department. Again, the discussions with that will start in March after the official budget is prepared and adopted. Second project is having our department providing planning services to various communities in Story County. Obviously, the smaller ones, City of Ames has their own professional planning staff. You heard from Huxley, and Nevada has a planner on vault and our zoning administrator as well. But reaching out and having a dialogue with communities, see what level of services we can provide to them, using the model of animal control and sheriff's deputies. Downtown facade pilot program. Grant funds have been incorporated into the budget to establish a pilot program that one or two communities can apply for a grant to do a downtown facade improvement. That, again, will be managed through our department. We are staff support for all the TIF applications that come forward, and we'll prepare those and I'm assuming bring recommendations on to planning our Board of Supervisors. We've also been charged to do an update of all the adopted plans and policies on the books by Story County to do a full-scale audit of what elements we do and do not have of a comprehensive plan. And then taking that a step further, those elements are missing and that we have not yet adopted to the plan in place to what steps we need to occur to have a truly comprehensive plan. Putting together a fact sheet on our community vision plan. This is directly a result of the CPAT recommendation that the board can take out to various communities and start looking at, in a cohesive nature, coming up with a common vision for Story County rather than an Ames vision, a Story County vision, a Zeering vision. This is a true Story County vision. Our staff will also be providing staff support to goal-setting sessions and strategic planning. The Board of Supervisors will embark in February on into April. Story County Board was awarded a grant to be one of the pilot programs through ISAC, Iowa State Association Counties, to have individuals from University of Iowa come facilitate these discussions. So as a result of that, we will have a strategic plan and goals and likely a mission statement for Story County. Also, we are charged with doing a full-scale audit of our zoning map, the various zoning districts that we have, number of developable lots that are there, and the various zoning districts. Does zoning make sense on certain pieces of ground? Do our zoning districts indeed make sense, too? An economic development RFP, request for proposals. Our staff will be working with Board of Supervisors to draft that RFP, release it, and I said get back to that budgeted amount. The Board of Supervisors in their proposed budget have $100,000 earmarked for economic development services. In response to this RFP, we're looking for an entity that will come in and provide economic development for Story County and the various communities. That will go out in March, and that will then be on board by July. And then one-stop permitting, a needs assessment. And our involvement in that has to be determined later. But it's actually kind of mind-blowing that the degree to which a lot of these projects are now really being brought forth and I don't want to say embraced, but we've been given some very clear direction that there's a role for Story County planning and development and making these projects come to light. And again, you guys will have an intimate role in many of those as well. Question. That's a long-range planning update, because you'll be getting a lot of it at you soon.
You can do it with your free time.
Well, there are a lot of really exciting things there that could benefit smaller towns here in the county, and will be a tremendous challenge for staff. So I think you'll meet yourself coming and going.
Yeah. Should be fun, though.
I think, well, I won't speak on behalf of everyone. I'm excited about this year and some opportunities to expand our horizons a little bit and show others on the talents that we have. That, I mean, you as commission members are well aware of the talents and services we can offer and trying to get the message out a little bit greater than we have been to.
Anything else? Okay, thank you. Commission comments. David? Steven?
I had rezoning request tonight was really difficult for me, and I think in reading between the lines, I felt that it may have also been difficult for staff in the way that it has worked its way through many processes to end up here. Is your assessment the same as Ames' assessment that the fringe plan is working? Could this be off the record?
No, by no means, no. I'm not saying no on that question, off the record.
Trying to think about...
if you look at it from the standpoint, we have not processed many amendments, and you look at that as a benchmark or some metric to measure whether or not it's being successful, then I would answer yes. But then you have cases like this that I think maybe might cause us all to step back a little bit and say, is that what we intend? Is that our true intention of this plan, to essentially create, I'll go ahead and say, no man's land in some areas of Story County?
That is a direct consequence of the plan that was adopted, though.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the individual was to come in with some sort of package plant that would allow a few small lots in this large area.
We had in the back of our mind that this would occur. At some level, it would occur. And mainly in these urban services areas, because the one condition that does apply across the board there is that annexation is required prior to development. I think what's playing my cap on, and it doesn't always help. It's not the most successful in predicting the future, but I think what will come out of this is maybe some more clear definitions or guidance on what do we all mean as development. Do we go back to the definition that is in our ordinance right now that was shared with you this evening is a very strict interpretation of development, and it's in fact from our the National Flood Insurance Program. Is that the only thing that we can come up with? And I you all are invited to come to the March meeting of the Board of Supervisors, because I think it will be a jumping point for some additional dialogue.
I certainly could have gone with approval of the rezoning with a recommendation to the board that they approve the rezoning because it's consistent with the plan, with the understanding that no development permit would be issued because it's issuing a development permit for a single house would not be consistent with the plan. But the rezoning is. So I think, for me, more clarification and a better understanding of the plan would be helpful in forming recommendations to the board.
And when we get to the stage of the Board of Supervisors, I hope we are able to work with Ames and come up with a response. Is this a plan or is this a regulation? Because really hearing a lot of the discussion tonight, I'm starting to get a little bit hesitant that too much power is put into the plan. That may seem hypocritical, a planner saying too much power is put into the plan, but I get a little bit concerned that we are drawing a line in the sand. It seems on a very firm basis with the plan. And one thing that a selling point when this was brought forward to the Board of Supervisors, Commission and Board of Supervisors years ago, it was going to be a constant evolving it would be a document that would, like our regulations, we'd look at, make sure it's working, and bring forward things that are not working. And I think maybe we are there.
I would be more than happy for the board to slap me down and say, no, this is not what they want. So
I'm going to...
And Ryan just reminded me that you all know that we had the plan in place for years, and then it took a number of years to get that agreement reached. This was the sticking point, and you know, we gave some, they gave some, and that is indeed where a lot of us wanted to kind of toe the line in some manner, and this was that point. Yeah, and I don't think the relationship is fragile. There is some positive. I agree with Jeff's comments that of many things a plan brings forth is predictability for those that want to develop. Now, the question is how do we all define what that development looks like? I think we're still not all on the same page. And the decision makers ultimately may slap me across on the hand too and say, yes, we are, now quit talking.
Nancy?
Well, what's Nancy, all his information and his comments, was he invited or he just looked at the agenda and he came?
According to the 20E agreement, we give Ames an opportunity to provide input. It might even be more strongly worded, too. They do not have land use decision-making within that fringe area, but I think it's worded that we give strong emphasis to the recommendations. I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but, yeah, we do, just like we notify the city of Huxley. Anything within 2 miles, we notify the communities.
I'm going to close out. I was on the city council for 4 years, and I always said the slipperiest thing we dealt with was a damn urban fringe plan, and now it's come back to bite me. I wanted so bad to vote with Dave.
I think that would have been the right thing to do, but
actually, I think you might be, you and I might be the only remnants around still from the original College Creek meeting.
Oof.
Oh, Bob Kindred.
Anything else?
I'm so afraid that you create a taking. You don't think so?
Create a what?
Well, there's still a viability of that partial for agricultural activity. We're not taking the entire land use of them. I think if you read the true taking, no. Unless the decision from the Supreme Court comes down a little bit different with the one that's in front of them now, I don't think so.
You're right.
Yeah.
The A1 zoning district. If we're on a greenbelt conservation, then that's when I get a little bit more nervous with the takings, but the A1 district has, just as you saw tonight, conditional uses as well that could be sought.
How about it being R1 before and being switched? What was that in the 80s? Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just rambling.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's adjourn and we can just discuss. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
801, we've adjourned.